Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Radio Cycling.
10 years after the Grand Départ of the Tour de France in Yorkshire, road racing in Britain is in crisis. The future of the Tour of Britain, men's and women's races, is hanging by a thread, and there's still no further news on the bid to bring the Tour back to Britain in 2026. My name's Jeremy Whittle. Welcome to Radio Cycling. Here's the news. British Cycling launched Rescue Plan to save the Tours of Britain.
It's important that we work through the challenges, that we can deliver races on the highway in a sustainable way.
Brexit, has it forced the downturn in British bike racing?
Every single one of those teams has got to be filling in extra paperwork. Sometimes I think perhaps the perception is harder than the reality.
Safer racing, yellow, red cards and playing politics.
The idea is with safer, we can make bike racing less dangerous and will reduce the chances of these accidents.
So hello everyone, I'm joined by Peter Cossens in the French Pyrenees, who's now taken off his marigold gloves after doing the washing up and is ready to pod. Hello there, Pete.
Hello, Jeremy.
And also live from what he says is a VIP lounge in glamorous Stansted Airport, but doesn't really look that way, is the jet-setting Chris Marshall-Bell. Hello, Chris.
Hello there, Jeremy. It is a VIP lounge. There's about 20 people around here, and they're probably all going to leave because they're not cycling fans, unless we make them cycling fans.
How's the finger buffet? You get a finger buffet in a VIP lounge.
I've not quite.
There isn't one,
that
is
yet.
There? You're lying. You're not in a VIP. No. Anyway, so it's fair to say that a decade after the euphoria of the Yorkshire Grand Départ in July 2014, road racing in Britain is on the brink. The British scene has now reached a pivotal moment. The loss of teams, of events, of bike retailers, of opportunities caused by the double whammy of Brexit and the pandemic has increased the obstacles facing talented young riders. Factor in the cost of living crisis and you have something of a perfect storm. There is hope though. Following the liquidation of Sweet Spot, former promoters of the Men's and Women's Tour of Britain, British Cycling have now stepped into the fray and launched a new bid to develop the sport. Right now, however, the situation for Britain's national tours remains bleak. There are no race routes, no sponsorship or stage details finalised. But British Cycling still intend that the women's and men's races will take place in their original 2024 dates in June and September this year. They will sit under a new multidiscipline banner of British Cycling events, launched with a focus on improving social justice, mobility and cohesion, and of tackling inactivity. But with time so short, how on earth can the governing body pull this off? Well, last week in Manchester, I sat down with British Cycling CEO John Dutton to try and better understand his rescue plan and what the future holds. So thank you very much for joining us on Radio Cycling, John. Obviously, you're in a bit of a race against time to save the Tours of Britain for this year.
We are.
We, as well documented, terminated our agreement with Sweet Spot, and are really focused on ensuring the races can go ahead in 24. There are many more obstacles to overcome, but also today is about launching our 5-year event vision and articulating that that they will sit as part of an overall portfolio of events underpinned by a social impact program.
I mean, does it feel like a lot is at stake here for you? Not just in terms of the races themselves, but obviously we've had a tough time in this country. The industry is having a tough time. We lost the Tour de Yorkshire. The women's tour didn't happen last year. It feels like this is quite a pivotal moment.
I think it is a pivotal moment. The races have great heritage. They are the national tours of Great Britain. They are a moment for people to stand at the side of the road that wouldn't normally experience cycling. It's an opportunity for both British and international riders to come and race on our shores. So it is a pivotal moment. It's important that we work through the challenges, that we can deliver races on the highway in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. We celebrate the heritage of what have come before, but also we start to form our own new history in the future, behaving differently, delivering things in a different way. For now, the focus is on ensuring that 24 Tour of Britain men and women go ahead, if at all possible, with all the work that we're investing in at the moment.
Are we likely to see not a compromised version of both races, but are we likely to see slight amendments to what we've known from the past because of the circumstances you find yourself in?
We will deliver them in a sustainable way. Obviously, as we sat here, we've got more time on Tour of Britain men that will happen in September and much less time Tour of Britain women. So what I would say about Tour of Britain women is delivered in a proportionate way. Still got an immense amount of work to do on that. But to deliver something that is special, is safe, creates great experiences for the riders and great memories for people coming along. And if we do that in 24, we believe we've got strong capability to grow that property, both properties in 25, 26 and beyond.
Obviously, you had a difficult time with these two races in recent months. As you say, very well documented story. But is there still overall a kind of big sea of goodwill towards the Tours of Britain?
Absolutely. So we've started to reach out to towns and cities, local authorities, who are obviously going through their own tough times, broadcasters, domestic and internationally, prospective sponsors, brands, also teams, riders, and people have stepped forward. And there's an enormous amount of goodwill. People really value Tour of Britain for men and for women. And I think everyone within the cycling ecosystem is doing everything they can to make sure that they happen in 2024. And that really gives us confidence that it's something special that we can take going forward.
And in terms of the UCI, I know you've had conversations with the UCI, is that progressing well? Are they fully supportive to your attempts to try and salvage the situation?
UCI have been fantastic. They've been incredibly understanding. We've still got a few I's to dot and T's to cross with them, and we'll continue to work in partnership. And again, looking at this from a overall perspective, we're here talking about Tour of Britain men and Tour of Britain women. There are so many disciplines that we're interested in collaborating, not just with the UCI, but with other event organisers going forward.
So the objective is to get over the issues that we have immediately in front of you now, that are confronting you now, and then build on that once you've got through this immediate crisis.
Yeah, it's to build momentum. It's to gain people's credibility. It's to start to see some things being put in place. So further news will follow over the coming weeks. And if we are successful in 24 in delivering sustainable races, then we're really, really excited about the opportunities going forward. We are under no illusions how difficult this is. So there is a huge dose of reality mixed with an incredible amount of determination and optimism.
Have you got your A team hard at work then?
We've got a really talented, very small, but perfectly formed team. It's really important that we add talent and experience to that team. We want British first throughout the whole of our delivery team and to make sure there's some succession planning there in the future. So, from small acorns to big trees at the moment, we're moving fast, moving quickly. But you can't really say anything more than the sense of determination the organisation, underpinned by the support from my board and the people around us. And that just shows how special those properties are.
Last thing, obviously, everyone's anxious that you succeed with this. And at the same time, I think there's still a lot of interest in what's happening with UK sport and the Tour de France bid for 2026. So I've recently had a little bit of exchange with UK sport about it, and they've been quite tight-lipped. Can you shed any further light on, has a proposal actually been submitted to ASO? I mean, are conversations with ASO ongoing?
Yeah, there's no bid submission timeline or deadline. We are part of the conversation. We would love to bring Tour de France Grand Départ back to these shores. UK Sport are leading, and we will continue our support for them.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's John Dutton. Now, for me, one of the key takeaways from that conversation is just how much it would help British cycling's battle to save this year's races if they knew, and we knew, that the Tour de France was coming back in 2026. Right now, though, we still don't. Secondly, it also seems clear that the women's tour will almost inevitably be shorter this year, maybe 3 or 4 days in length. But at least that will secure its place on the world tour.
Jez, I just wanted to ask, one of the things I'm sure that some listeners and I picked up on last week was the fact that the UCI have taken these two races out of this year's 2024 calendar. I mean, where does that leave them? I mean, if, on the face of it, they aren't going to go ahead. Was there any detail on that?
Well, as I understand it, the UCI are fully supportive, and because the names have been changed, I think that's why they're removed from the calendar, and they are retaining the original dates. So I think they're going to be reinserted into the calendar. It was a bit confusing, but when I was talking to John Dutton, they were actually talking to the UCI that day and the day before as well. And as far as I understand it, they are completely supportive.
Jess, can I just have this 3 points that I want to raise here? I'm being very, very greedy today. First one, I think fair play to British Cycling, because even though there was a lot of pressure on them to step up here and run these races, they could have also said, look, our finances are also bleak. We don't need this pressure. We're not going to do this. So fair play to them. They've saved these races and they deserved a lot of credit for that. And I also thought John Dutton spoke really, really well there. One thing I did read, though, and this wasn't in this interview there, which I didn't like, was last week he said that he hopes that the men's tour of Britain can become a world tour event in the next few years. That is unsustainable and it's not going to happen. The whole point of the Tour of Britain, well, one of its main points is that it provides an opportunity for the continental teams, the third-tier teams, like the St. Piran and in recent years, you know, GLT. If you have a world tour event, those teams cannot compete in it. So the men's tour of Britain in its current format and its current objective of growing the domestic scene, which let's be honest, is on its knees in the UK, cannot go as a world tour event. So I really hope that doesn't happen, to be honest. And finally, on the Tour de France as well, interesting how he won't admit that a bid has been submitted, no? It sounds like maybe the signals that we were getting a year and a half ago aren't as strong as what, well, they don't reflect the reality.
Well, that is a key point, Chris, because I think as well, the last kind of few months, we've all been trying to speak to UK Sport to get more clarity on this, and we still don't know. I'm not clear if a bid has been submitted or if it's just conversations. I mean, since the World Championships in Glasgow, we've all been asking, because obviously Christian Prudhomme and Bernardino, who are synonymous with the Tour and with ASO, were both in Glasgow at the World Championships. So it's a bit confusing. I mean, the signals are very muddied, and I have recently asked UK Sport if they can give us some clarity, but maybe there are some more sensitivities, bigger sensitivities. You know, is it feasible to announce the Tour de France coming to Britain at a cost of however multi-million euro cost it would be in an election year? Is this one of the reasons? So, picking up on the crisis facing the British scene, let's talk Brexit. Yes, before you all throw the crockery at the mention of the B word, let's look at the impact of the infamous referendum on the British scene.
Yes, Jeremy. Just before last September's Tour of Britain, I spoke to Pete Hodges, who oversaw logistical planning on the race for Sweet Spot, about two principal issues stemming from the Brexit vote. The first was fairly immediate. The vote triggered a steady reduction in the value of the pound against the euro. Because the euro is a currency of professional cycling, this immediately affected budgets for the Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour. Several key costs of staging the race immediately went up. For example, prize money, which is payable in euros under the terms of the UCI. various bits of kit that have to be hired from Europe. If you've got a time trial, for example, the Ventuses that secure the nameplates, they come from Europe and they have to be paid for in euros. Some of the TV production was done in European countries. Obviously, that has to be paid for in euros as well. Post-Brexit, these costs rose by 10 to 15%, a lot for races on a very tight budget. The key change, though, is the impact it had on the teams, as Pete Hodges explains.
Obviously, the majority of teams come to the Tour of Britain or the Women's Tour from abroad. So even the likes of Ineos are effectively a foreign team coming to the Tour of Britain. You know, they're coming from a service course in Belgium. So every single one of those teams has got to be filling in extra paperwork. You know, we suddenly went from a situation where up until the 2019 race, including the 2019 race, they rocked up at Calais, you know, came off at Dover, and, you know, it was all straightforward. It was just like travelling from France into Spain or Germany into wherever. And then suddenly in 2021, you had the situation of carnets, extra paperwork. And there was also at that time, we had the added murkiness, shall we say, of all the COVID restrictions, which obviously were different for Britain to other places. But that's obviously not a Brexit-related thing. If anything, I think it perhaps covered up some of the issues that are pure Brexit related. So it's the paperwork. And I think the knock-on effect is that you and your listeners will know what it's like. Cycling teams talk to each other and they like to rumour and, you know, moan amongst each other like we all do. And I think a lot of them will say, oh, you know, are you going to Britain? Are you going to Ride London? Are you going to the Tour of Britain? Oh, you've got to do that extra paperwork. Oh, you've got to do this. And it, sometimes I think perhaps the perception is harder than the reality.
Now, just picking up on what Pete said there, most teams are used to filling out some of these forms already when they're travelling to non-EU countries like Switzerland, for example. But if you add in the increased cost of ferries, of fuel, and of much else in the UK, British races then end up in a situation where some European teams decided against making the trip to Britain in 2021 and 2022. Hodges then highlighted another issue that's proved a headache, which is trying to find some clarity or clearance when problems have occurred. He said that Chambers of Commerce have been a great help when it came to sourcing the ATA carnies, which he referenced there. They're otherwise known as the passport for goods. And all teams need these when they enter the UK. Government departments, though, have not been as useful when it, in terms of logistics.
I think part of it, though, with all the carnies, it's a little bit unclear as to who's in charge, who's authorising what. And also, you know, we don't necessarily know what the teams are bringing in. It's, you know, it would probably be a lot easier if all the teams were on one plane, one boat, and you could just sort of bring the whole lot in. But it's that that weird sort of movement of, you know, different numbers of vehicles and so forth. But yeah, it's when we were doing it first starting, it's very, very hard to find a single source of information of that, you know, reference, that sort of thing. So I know that the guys at British Cycling have sort of raised and flagged this as well in terms of saying, because for them, they obviously have the issue with GB teams going abroad, people coming to track World Cups and so forth.
That was Peter Hodges, formerly of Sweet Spot. Now, Brexit might also be causing more complications for British riders who are now limited in the amount of time they can spend in the EU. Assuming they don't have a special visa or established residency, British passport holders now can spend a maximum of 90 days in any 180-day period within the EU. Pete, one rider who's been particularly vocal on this is Tom Portsmouth, who this season has stepped up from Bingle WB's development team to the pro team.
That's right, Jeremy. Tom's been very critical of the difficulties created by Brexit on his social media channels and in the press. He's written about it at some length. Tom was 14 when the referendum happened back in 2016, but it was only 4 years later that he began to understand the impact that it would have on him. 2020, of course, was the year that COVID first hit, and he needed to be a resident in a European country before the end of that year to get an ongoing residency permit. But he wasn't able to do so because of the COVID restrictions imposed in Britain and across Europe. He then opted to get legal help in an attempt to circumvent this issue.
January, February 2021, we were working with a lawyer to try and get that processed, but without a professional working contract, that wasn't possible. We hit a dead end there, and then it was, yeah, okay, accepting of the fact that we're going to have to be working with these days for the next couple of years, at least, while I try and strive for that pro contract to get some money on the card.
Portsmouth then had to navigate his way towards the pro ranks, using those 90 days in the most advantageous way he could.
You need to be logistically competent on understanding how it works. It took a year and a half to fully understand how it worked. As you've got a couple of years under the belt, and learned how each period that you were in Belgium rolled over to the next one. So now in the third year of working with the day, it's become a little bit more natural. You can sort of see the patterns and how long you can spend here, go back there, and you figure out and you build those brain pathways alongside the calculator that's available online.
Now, when you look at the calendars that under 23 riders and junior riders like Tom was last year, that they're riding every year, you realise that it's not many days in total. It's nothing like 90 over 6 months. But it's not just the riding of races that's the struggle. It's the preparation for them too.
I think the biggest thing that can be gained from living in Europe, the extra time to relax and gain the knowledge of whatever race you're going to. So, for example, Roubaix, very technical race that you need to build up this massive fever in your head and do several reconnaissance missions. It's just not possible. You have such limited days. You know, every one of those days that you go and do a reconnaissance, even in a day, I woke up at what, 3:30, went to Roubaix, did the full recon with the team, came back for 10:30 to England, just because I knew I needed to do it, but I had no time really to spare. So it was like a day mission, get it done and sleep.
Now, Portsmouth says that one of his biggest fears about the system is not the impact it's had on his development as a rider. He was already on the path he wanted to follow when Brexit hit, but it's the riders who'll be following him that he's concerned about.
That is my biggest fear, the fact that people, one, might not be able to come and do the races as many as maybe we had the liberty of doing when I was a junior and youth rider. But even then with school, you're coming back in the sports anyway. So, it does strike a balance. The biggest fear is that teams may start to look at it and see the bureaucracy involved and be like, yeah, let's not deal with that. Let's go this way.
Pete, you then turn to Jocelyn Ryan, not only a longtime member of the organisation at Sweet Spots Races in the UK, but also a key member of the Dave Rayner Fund. Now, the Dave Rayner Fund is the charity that's provided more than £1 million of funding to British riders over the last 30 years, with no fewer than 84 of them going on to turn professional. That's including names like David Miller, Charlie Wigelius, Adam Yates, Teo Gegenhart, and Portsmouth himself.
That's right, Jeremy. I mean, it just seemed like the obvious place to go because allied to British Cycling's obviously programme in terms of sending riders abroad, the Dave Rayner Fund has been fundamental to the success of British riders over the last two, three decades. And the first thing that Joss pointed out was that Brexit had resulted in a change of focus for the funds in terms of where it places its riders. Now, different countries have different requirements for workers coming into the EU from outside the community. Some are quite demanding in terms of the minimum salary required, others are less so. It has, as Joss Ryan explained to me, made finding a foreign team more complicated than it once was for British riders.
Of course it has, yes. It's affected them. Yeah, they're finding a way to work around it, most of them, put it that way. But it's certainly affected which countries they go to. They're mainly going to France now, France and Spain, because they're the easiest and most flexible countries that are offering visa opportunities, let's say.
Yeah.
Very few of them are going to Belgium, for instance, which is popular. So, it is affecting them, for all the usual reasons that most people know about or have come across themselves, the ease of travel these days, the length of time, finding teams to accept riders as well when they are British, because the teams know that there could be extra complications, that kind of thing.
Now, we started off by talking about the extra costs that are involved for teams, for race organisers, and of course those costs are there for riders as well. And when they're looking for opportunities abroad, of course this is a sport that's already very expensive in the first place. It's making things much more difficult for them.
It's costing them a lot more money in everything, in every way now. And, you could bring that back to being caused by racing, when that's the cost of travel, the cost of bike parts, etc., the cost of fuel, the cost of food.
Yeah.
Cost the body all those extras, but, particularly the riders with crossing the channel and the extra travel that they help them with.
Now, Joss said there's been no let-up in the number of riders applying to the Rayner Fund, and that if riders are determined enough, they will always find a way to get across to the continent and race, just like they always have. Let's remember, when the fund was established in the mid-1990s, it was hard for British riders to find their way to European club teams and then into the pro ranks. We're not back at that point yet, but it's not as easy as it was pre-Brexit. Finally, I asked Pete Hodges, Tom Portsmouth and Josh Ryan if they could see any upsides to Brexit for the British racing scene. They were unanimous in saying they couldn't. Portsmouth summed things up by saying this.
No. Yeah, when someone does, please come and tell me and show me how it's a positive, because at the moment, I don't see anything, even back home in England. I don't see anything.
So that's enough Brexit. Now for the fun stuff. Chris Marshall-Bell is here, as ever, to fill us in on the latest goings-on in cycling's political circles. And no, it's not just one cycling, although we will come to that, of course, inevitably. First, we're going to learn a little bit about a safety initiative called SAFER, which you may have heard about before. Indeed, Visma-Lisa Bike's general manager, Richard Plugger, mentioned it when he appeared on Radio Cycling. First of all, Chris, what is SAFER?
Well, SAFER, Jeremy and Peter, is, as it sounds, is a concept by all of cycling's major stakeholders to make the sport of cycling safer. The idea is that, you know, we've seen some awful incidents in the last 3, 4, 5 years. Gino made his death. Fabio Jakobsen's awful accident in August 2020. The idea is with SAFER, we can make bike racing safer, less dangerous, and we'll reduce the chances of these accidents. Everyone agrees that this is a fantastic idea. It's wonderful. It's going to make cycling better. One of the ideas proposed is a yellow and red card system, although it's not yet been agreed upon how that would work.
Okay, all sounds good. I mean, the yellow and red card system, I think, needs some clarification, doesn't it, onto whether that's for the is that for the riders or the race organisers, or just a system of kind of like cautioning people for bad riding, or do you know?
It seems to be just for riders. So I can't remember his name, but like the guy for Bahrain who crashed into riders at Paris-Roubaix last year, for example, you know, he would get an immediate red card there. And then yellow cards would be, I don't know, I'm guessing here, but it would be something that could have led to a more dangerous situation.
The guy, the guy who caused that mass stack up in the Tour of Flanders?
Correct.
Last year, yeah, who went to the puddle and then bounced back into the centre of the peloton.
Yes.
He did get pulled from the race almost five minutes later, didn't he?
Well, he did, so I guess he was the cycling's first ever recipient.
He was the guinea pig.
He was a guinea pig. Yeah. God, what a bit of history that was.
Okay, so is everyone in agreement, or has the usual bickering already got going?
Well, you guessed that one and one, didn't you? So, even though everyone does agree that this is a great idea, and I think fans will as well, the problem is it has been proposed that Jaap van Hulten will be SAFER's chief executive. Now, van Hulten is probably a name that no one is familiar with, but he is the chief operating officer of Visma-Lisa Bike. Now, a letter was sent to Javier Guillen, who is the director of the team's organisation, the AIGCP, in mid-January, that we have seen, and it was asking how van Hulten was approved as the CEO of SAFER without a vote, you know, it wasn't a democratic vote, and also how he can be independent, because what people are saying is, will he favour red and yellow cards to Visma's rivals, or will, you know, if a Visma rider commits an offence, is he going to say, well, actually, no, that's not a yellow card, that's not a red card.
I'm pretty sure, maybe it's different in Holland, but I don't think in this country you can be a CEO and then a COO.
Well, it's two different entities, isn't it? Because he's a CEO.
Well, yeah, well, there's two different roles, but a chief executive officer and a chief operating officer for two different companies. That's clearly a conflict of interest in business, I'd have thought.
Well, exactly. And this is at the heart of this issue. Mm. It's a massive conflict of interest. So we've seen Guillen replied to the AIGCP last week, and we've seen this email. I'm just going to read out two paragraphs which stood out to me. He said, Mr. van Hulten's background is admittedly one of the teams, so one could assume that organisers of the UCI could be concerned that he may favour teams' interest over organisers of the UCI's. However, in fact, according to Guillen, this concern is non-existent, as evidenced by his support from all of his stakeholders, who would say that it is equally unlikely that he should favour one team to the detriment of others. Guillen added, "My understanding is that SAFER has no role whatsoever in its application of yellow and red cards, so as I see it, there is simply zero potential for conflict of interest with any SAFER employee in this regard." As you would expect, not many people were satisfied with that answer, and they do not want Van Hulten appointed as CEO.
Well, if he's going to be CEO and COO, I want to be like head of people and culture, and I also want to be financial director as well, and head of marketing. Anyway, so where are we at now? Where are we at now with this?
So SAFER was meant to be ratified, all of its finer points confirmed in Prague on Saturday during the Cyclocross World Championships. We've not heard back exactly how those proceedings went. We're expecting a press release from the UCI at some point this week. The only information I do have is that one insider said to me rather cryptically that some of the changes requested will be made. So whether that means Van Hulten was no longer going to be the CEO or not, we don't know. But it's one to keep an eye on, because there is a very obviously a conflict of interest at play here, and you can understand why a lot of people are not happy.
Okay, we'll see. Now, what about our dear old friend, One Cycling? Chris, what's the latest?
Well, some listeners might have seen in the last 2-3 days that, yet again, Reuters have reported that SRG Sport Investment, which is an arm of Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, is now the front runner to launch a new cycling league. Now, we've been reporting as much for several months, but Reuters has now gone a step further, saying that $270 million was to be invested in the project, and it could be signed off within the next 2 months. The situation is a little bit confusing, though, Jez, because various trusted sources, we should add as well, have indicated very different things to us in recent months. It was only a few months ago that we were led to believe that a deal was imminent. It was days away. Although most noises coming out from most stakeholders in recent weeks has been one of a stalled project, so we don't really know where we stand, really.
So the Reuters article, then, does it? Some of it stands up for me, but does it all stand up with what we're hearing?
I mean, a lot of it backed what we've been hearing and backed what we've been reporting on as well. But when we sent out various messages at the weekend, the overwhelming response was, the article was very, very wide of the mark. It's this project, One Cycling, is nowhere near close to being completed yet. It's not going to be done in the next 2 months. One source actually said to me that AY consultancy firm, which is the firm who's been trying to find investors, had probably leaked this information to the press because they were so desperate just to try and force it through, and they basically wanted their nice commission, which was going to be in a region of 10 to 15 million euros. We were, which, you know, politics again, eh? We were hearing that at the Alula tour last week, obviously Saudi Arabia's biggest tour, that was a crucial week. There were going to be lots of meetings planned. We were also led to believe that Yann Lamona, who essentially runs ASO, the promoters of the Tour de France, he was there, although we've not been able to confirm that, so I don't really want to say for sure that he was there. It's worth pointing out that ASO have not signed up to this. They're still quite resistant, but we expected the Alula tour to be quite significant. Word coming out of that is actually nothing concrete happened. There was no significant progress, and it seems like maybe they've missed a real key opportunity to make the mark. But then, on the flip side to that, you have the Alula tour, and then you have this press report from Reuters saying it's close to happening. So maybe something did happen that was of substantial note. Don't know.
So it goes on, doesn't it? How do we view the prospects of One Cycling then at the moment? I mean, is it kind of like, are we any closer, or are we still just documenting rumour and counter-rumour?
It's kind of it, really, isn't it? And I think it depends on who you speak to. I think there's still a real key issue in this. You know, what is the return on investment in cycling? How do you do this without ASO on board? Why have RCS, the promoters of the Giro, got cold feet and ran away from it? You know, I'm purely going to speculate here, but I could see a situation where six teams, Visma, Lisa Bike, Ineos, EF, Bora, etc., Little Trek, announce that it's happening, announce that they've got funding from the Saudis, it's going ahead, in the hope that the other stakeholders, ASO, other teams, will come on board and they'll try force it through like that. Now, I don't think that tactic would work, if I'm being completely honest, but I could see it happening because I feel like there's a bit of desperation coming involved, and there's a lot of people thinking, we've got to do this now. But I still think we're going to be talking about this for the next 4 or 5 months.
So it could be like the love train then. It's leaving the station. You've got to get on board.
And it's Valentine's Day soon, Jez.
So that's about it for this show. Thanks to Pete and Chris and producers Will and Will, and of course to all our guests. Thanks as ever for listening. We'll be back soon. See you next time.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.